is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and the operative word today is exhale. Because the comeback of Tiger Woods will not include back-to-back major victories now, not after Tiger looked in pain at times during the first round of the PGA Championship on a day of three putts, wayward tee shots, awkward swings, poor irons, and wasted opportunities. And Tiger can't blame nasty conditions on Long Island. The sun was out, wind was minimal, and he double bogeyed his first hole. Tiger just sucked, to use his word. So you can stop hyperventilating about the greatest comeback in the history of the solar system, okay? As for Zion Williamson, his stepfather, who helps control Zion's business, says Zion is not returning to Duke and is indeed excited about the prospect of joining the New Orleans Pelicans, contrary to Williamson's heartbroken body language at the NBA draft lottery. Deep breaths.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted by incessant Tiger hype, Brooks Koepka has been sorely underpublicized during his reign over golf, with very little attention entering the PGA Championship as the buzz devoured Woods. But Koepka, playing in the same group as Tiger, reminded the loud and raucous galleries at Bethpage Black that he indeed has won three of the last seven majors and intends to win his fourth this weekend after shooting a course record 63. It was Koepka's 10th straight round under par in the majors, and he says he never has been more confident. We can tell. While Tiger was opening with a horrible tee shot and that double bogey, Koepka was chipping in for a birdie, setting the tone and distancing himself from Woods by 9 shots, entering the second round Friday afternoon. Seems it's time the media start hyperventilating over Koepka, even if his low-key ways lead to conclusions that he lacks charisma. Brooks lets his charisma explode with his every swing and putt on the course. Koepka defies common thought when he says the majors are the easiest events for him to win. He says he simply dummies it down, and hey, it works in what has been golf's best championship run since Woods back at the turn of the century.
The easiest way I can break it down is there's about
156 in the field.
156 in the field. So you figure at least 80 of them, I'm just going to beat. From there, the other, you figure about half of them won't play well from there, so you're down to about maybe 35. And then from 35, you know, some of them just, you know, pressure is going to get to them. So only leaves you with a few more, and you just got to beat those guys. If you just hang around, I think one of the big things that I've learned over the last few years is you don't need to win it. You don't have to try to go win it. Just hang around. If you just hang around, good things are going to happen. So I think that's what's kind of caused me an issue in the regular PGA Tour events. I've gone out on Saturday and tried to build a cushion. maybe pressed a little bit too hard and gotten ahead of myself. Where in the majors, I just stay in the moment. I never think one hole ahead. I'm not thinking about tomorrow. I'm not thinking about the next shot. I'm just thinking about what I've got to do right then and there. And I kind of dummy it down and make it very simple. And I think that's what helps me. That's what helps.
And Koepka certainly isn't backing down from Tiger, as he showed right away on Long Island, where an abundance of rain and cool temperatures earlier this week made the course play even longer, which plays right into Koepka's hands. His power game reminds me of Tiger back in the day.
Yeah, there's a big age difference there. He's a little bit older. But, I mean, I don't see it as a rivalry. It's just golf. I mean, it's not like it's been, there's a huge history there where it's been over, you know, like football, you've got a rivalry that's been over 20, 30 years. I mean, it's just really been the last couple of years. So I don't see it as a rivalry. Although it is fun to play against him, best player to ever play the game. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, you guys want to talk about a rivalry. I think that's pretty cool.
The question now is whether Woods, who is trying to play as little as possible to protect his health between majors, brought on some rust by not playing a single competitive round between the Masters and the PGA. He might have to rethink that strategy with the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach only 4 weeks away and the Open Championship in mid-July. Here was Tiger on his subpar opening round.
Well, I got off to just not the best start today. You know, making a double at the first hole and fought my way back and, you know, around there. And unfortunately, let a couple slip away at the end with some bad putts. And, this probably, could have been a little bit better today.
For you, for the rest of the week, usually there's one thing that I know kind of eats at you a little bit after a round. Is there that one thing, and what do you have to improve upon for the rest of the week?
I left a few shots out there, making two double bogeys and having 2-3 putts today. It wasn't very clean today. And, consequently, I'm a long way back.
And it couldn't have helped his focus much when that wrongful death lawsuit was filed on PGA Eve with Woods and his girlfriend, Erica Herman, blamed after a bartender was overserved at Woods' Florida restaurant, where Herman is the general manager, and was killed in a car crash with a blood alcohol level of 0.256, which is 3 times the legal limit. Of course, Woods, who owns the restaurant, and his girlfriend, who runs the restaurant, are going to be held liable. Nothing has changed, has it? Tiger back on top, only to be sabotaged by a scandal, possibly of his own making. As for John Daly, who was granted a special exemption to use a cart because of arthritis in his right knee, he showed up with a cigarette in his mouth, navigated those rolling hills with a 44-ounce big gulp of Diet Coke, and hung around 4 over for a while, only a couple of shots behind Woods. Wouldn't Tiger have loved a special exemption for a cart after all of his injuries and surgeries through the years? Yep, he said it the other day, but John Daly, boy, they need those crowds on Thursdays. They had a big gallery. It's the metropolitan New York area. You don't have to have favors for John Daly. You don't need him there. He's a sideshow. The thing is, he hung in there. I expected him to be at, plus 18 and then bailing on the 12th hole. Nope. I repeat, the Warriors can beat the Trailblazers without Kevin Durant playing a single minute in the series. But they cannot beat Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks without Durant playing a regular role in the NBA Finals. And right now, after an evaluation of his right calf strain, Durant is not close to returning to action as the Warriors head to Portland with a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals. It kind of makes you wonder if the plan right now is to sit Durant until his services are necessary. And if Durant, like Kawhi Leonard last season in San Antonio, is insisting on sitting so as not to jeopardize his health with his free agency bonanza a few weeks away. Let's end the notion right now that these Warriors are a better team without Durant. That's a joke, as evidence they blew a 3-1 lead, you may have heard, and lost the finals in 2016 when they didn't have him, prompting the Warriors to recruit Durant just a few miles away from Bethpage Black, by the way, in the Hamptons. Ding, ding, ding. And Durant, as you also might know, has been the finals MVP twice, as Golden State has won back-to-back titles. Okay, so stop that nonsense. And all of that overwhelms any recent statistical junk offered by the numerical nerds out there who point out the Warriors have won 29 of the last 30 games when Steph Curry plays and Durant doesn't. I don't care, okay? Sometimes you have to just look at the simple big picture of life. There's no doubt the Warriors are having more fun without Durant, who does slow down the free-flowing ballet when he plays isolation ball. Not that those ISOs don't put the Warriors over the top when needed. How many times has Durant bailed them out? Steph, Clay, Dre, Andre, they're all able to take a way back machine to the pre-KD years when everybody marveled at this basketball revolution. But I remind you that Durant, before this calf injury, was enjoying one of the greatest singular postseasons ever, with his 34.2 points per game ranking second in the last 25 years, just short of LeBron James, 35.3 back in 2009. Yes, Durant is the most valuable player on the team and the best player and the most complete player, and that goes for the entire league as well. Don't ever forget that, period, just so we have that straight. And they will need Durant at close to 100% to beat the Bucks in the finals, presuming that happens, even if they don't have him against the Trailblazers, who did adjust their defense. Congratulations on that, Terry Stotts, and did have big men Enes Kanter and Zach Collins rushing toward Curry and Klay Thompson in Game 2 instead of plopping down in the paint and allowing those uncontested three-pointers. None of it mattered. The Blazers are down 0-2, and I'm looking at the Warriors in 5, meaning Mr. and Mrs. Curry can plan for another finals in Oakland and not a shocking finals in Portland, where son Seth is playing for the Blazers. But do say this about Steph. He has been fabulous in stepping right up without Durant, quieting those social media trolls who were pounding him amid his poor shooting in the Houston series. That is, until he went for 33 in the second half of the deciding Game 6. All you need to know is that the Warriors entered Game 2 at plus 29 this postseason when Curry is on the court and Durant is not. That has led some to conclude that Curry is their most important player, that he is the system. And some of that is from amateurs in the media who simply don't like Durant's scowling moments at times and love how Steph is always cordial, even in tough times. Media people have their favorites, especially when they're cranky covering an entire postseason. You could see that bias seeping out of their reports. Just remember, earlier this postseason, when Curry was a complete mess, Durant was bailing his ass out. So be careful when you make crazy observations based on a few games. Are the champs more aesthetically pleasing without Durant? Yeah, I'll give you that. Are they a better team? Hell no. As they will find out next season when Durant is in New York or LA or wherever he might go. Face it, Zion Williamson looked like he had a diarrhea attack upon hearing three words the other night, New Orleans Pelicans. And when he refused in his only post-lottery interview to acknowledge New Orleans as his NBA destination, it sparked this question. Because he is not yet signed with an agent or inked a shoe contract, might the most hyped prospect since LeBron return to Duke? Much as everybody outside of Louisiana wants Zion anywhere but the Smoothie King Center, and that would account for the NBA office, the TV networks, New York people, Chicago people, LA people, the rest of the flippin' nation, Williamson's stepfather put an end to those thoughts, saying Zion will not return to Duke. According to Lee Anderson, Williamson will not pull a power play and demand a trade or return to college, which he could have done under new NCAA rules if he were to pull his name out of the draft by June the 10th. Here was stepdaddy Zion appearing on a Baton Rouge radio station with two yahoos who you've got to listen to this and how, oh my God, what is happening to my industry?
And Lee, through that 1 year, he now becomes the consensus number one. And look, man, we are a South Louisiana radio show. People have been going insane since the Pelicans got this first overall pick. Cannot wait for Zion. There's been a lot of national stories about Zion maybe returning to school, doing this or that. How do y'all feel about potentially coming to the Crescent City?
We're excited. We're excited about that. One thing that Zion has always been taught, you accept the things that you can't change. You change the things that you can change. And this is one of the things that he had nothing to do with. It's the process of the NBA. And certainly, you know, we're excited about the Crescent City down there in New Orleans. And you said about returning to Duke, you know, there's been a lot of speculation, but that is nothing that we have even considered.
Wow. Lee, I love you. I'm so happy right now. I cannot wait. The city's going to love him. We're already talking about him doing who that chance of the Saints is. We cannot wait, man. The hope revolving around the Pelicans now, thanks to Zion, it's kind of incredible outside looking in.
So, barring a change of heart, this will not be another blow to a city that has dealt with the NOLA, no call in the NFC title game, and the failed Anthony Davis trade demand. Yes, Instagram video footage has made the rounds showing Zion hardly overjoyed after New Orleans was announced as the winner of the top pick. Here was that video with Zion just sort of sitting there as the likes of RJ Barrett and Ja Morant mock the idea of him going to New Orleans when Zion wanted to go to New York. Barrett, his college teammate, likely is headed there instead, with Morant locked in for Memphis. Here was that video. Listen closely. With his stepfather's guidance, Zion has painted himself as a human being who never would go back on his word. That was his rationale for continuing to play for Duke in the NCAA tournament after injuring his knee when his Nike shoe exploded back in February. By the way, are they going to sign with Nike or somebody else? Are they going to trust Nike? You know, the cool move would be Nike, because I think Nike would make damn sure that he has the most secure shoe in the history of shoemaking. But he might kind of say, nah, we're going to go with an opposing company. Could you see Adidas maybe doing negative advertising using that exploding shoe? Problem is, Adidas is dirty in the college basketball scandal, although so is Nike. I don't know. Maybe he could start his own company and call it Zion, a Mariotti aside. And burning New Orleans would be a carpet-bagging move for Williamson, forcing the Pelicans into another trade situation after Davis demanded a trade out of town. But if you think Davis now wants to stay long-term to play with Zion, now that Zion's stepfather says he's staying in New Orleans, well, word is Davis wants no part of New Orleans, no matter what, Zion or no Zion. His stance has not changed about wanting a trade, which means new general manager David Griffin, in saying he might hold on to Davis for his final season before a free agency in hopes of convincing him to sign long-term the way, say, Oklahoma City convinced Paul George. Well, that is very dangerous thinking, because Griffin then could lose Davis in the summer of 2020 without any compensation. He needs to get the best talent package possible right now for Davis, team that package with Zion, and I think that package most likely comes from Boston, though the Lakers will try very hard with the number four pick as a major sweetener. Problem is, Boston has Danny Ainge running the show, and the Lakers have a bunch of circus clowns. What would I do if I were Williamson? If Zion really wants New York, he needs to hire an agent and start that process, because that's what the league wants. That's what everybody wants, the TV networks. I don't think Zion would get much opposition if he wants to do that, but his stepdad says otherwise. The Pelicans, in that case, would get the number three pick. They could grab future number ones from the Knicks. I certainly would not go back to Duke. You're jeopardizing a major injury again. I might withdraw from the draft, wait for 2020, play overseas, as another former Duke star, Danny Ferry, did when he spurned the Clippers once upon a time and played in Italy before he was traded to Cleveland, where he flopped. We've seen all sorts of these stories in sports. Steve Francis using his leverage once upon a time. Certainly, John Elway, Eli Manning, Dominique Wilkins. Zion Williamson could use his leverage, but I think the purpose of going on that goofy Baton Rouge show, do it in Louisiana, and make it clear that the Williamson family is controlling this negative and not allowing Zion's teenaged facial expressions to rule the roost here. The old man here is kind of reminds me of Shaquille O'Neal's stepfather. I mean, he's telling Zion, you're going to keep your word, kid, and you're going to New Orleans, and you could become a free agent in a few years, but you're going there right now. You had better wise up and like it. That's what's going on right now. So in the end, Zion staying in New Orleans, and hopefully he does not make noises in 2 years about being traded, because that's the last thing the NBA needs after the Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, and Paul George pre-agency leverage plots that we've seen. In one sense, the draft lottery is the league's power play revenge against free agents who form super teams, holding control over where players play initially in their careers. But once free agency is on the horizon, a year or even 2 years away, the player has all the power when he is a superstar. Adam Silver can't fix this. It's not fixable. And it speaks well for Milwaukee's chances of reaching the NBA Finals when the Raptors swarm Giannis Antetokounmpo, keeping the Bucks out of sorts through much of Game 1, only to have Brook Lopez take over with a stunning all-around masterpiece. The self-taught three-point shooter, best ever among seven-footers, confounded Toronto on both ends, bombs, in the paint, blocks, you name it, and showed why the Bucks are more than Giannis, and more Giannis. This even as Leonard got help from an unconscious Kyle Lowry. So this was a deflating loss for the Raptors, who are showing fatigue and aren't helping Leonard beyond a player or two a night. Kawhi cannot be Superman every night. With only 2 points and five shots in the fourth quarter, he was part of a collective that, other than Lowry, went 0-for-15 in the final 12 minutes. The basketball world is realizing that Milwaukee indeed is a complete team, even when not at its best. And Giannis likes how the Bucks are surviving these tough games in a postseason when they are, ready, 9-1.
I think it's good because sometimes when the team face adversity, you can see how the team respond. And I think the team did a great job just playing hard and responding their way. I think we need games like this because not every game going to be a blowout. Not every game going to be easy. So, we're going to go back tomorrow, watch the tape, try to get better. And I think this game definitely made us better.
Giannis said the Bucks are trying to make Kawhi feel like it's 1-5. Not only is that not an equation to win the Eastern Conference Finals, it's not how the Raptors can convince Leonard to stay as free agency approaches. The NBA, incidentally, wisened up. Why make everybody work all night through the wee hours, instead moving the start of free agency from midnight Eastern on July the 1st to 6 p.m. on the 30th of June? That means the destinations of Durant, Leonard, Irving, Butler, and others should be known that night or shortly after. And I'm wondering how the Knicks screw this one up when most insiders have Durant signed, sealed, and delivered to New York. If I'm Durant, I am avoiding the Knicks and their jackass owner, James Dolan, like a measles epidemic. But apparently, Durant wants to prove he can take a path through hell after being derided for choosing the heavenly, easier path with Golden State. I still say with Durant, the Clippers are a wild card, zero chance with the Lakers. He doesn't want to be with LeBron. Nobody wants to play with LeBron. Oh, I think Lonzo Ball does. As long as the Johnson family owns the team, the J-E-T-S Jets will be a M-E-S-S mess. Only the Jets would fire general manager Mike Maccagnan after signing big-ticket free agents Le'Veon Bell and C.J. Mosley and drafting can't-miss defensive stalwart Quinnen Williams. And here's the thing. Owner Christopher Johnson is excited about those players. So why fire the GM who acquired them just a few weeks later? Because Johnson, who's a goof, wants synergy between the GM and new head coach Adam Gase, who disagreed with Maccagnan about committing $132 million to Bell and Mosley. What is there to disagree with here? Why would Gase complain about having a hybrid back like Bell, who is rested up, and a star linebacker like Mosley? I have no idea. But Gase is a character who demanded personnel power in Miami, and he got fired. And now he has won a power struggle in New York. Congratulations to Gase. He will have a strong voice with the new GM, likely to be Philadelphia's Joe Douglas, with whom Gase, of course, has a good relationship. Here was Johnson preferring to kick a good man to the curb before we see how Maccagnan's investments perform.
There's more to the job of being a GM than just adding great players. I think that there's, you know, the fans should be excited about that. They should be excited about Bell and Mosley and Bellamy and Quinnen Williams and all the rest. I mean, I think we did, we brought in some great guys. But this is more than Mike. It's more than Adam. It's about this team moving forward. I think this is actually going to be a really attractive job. I don't think we're going to have any trouble finding a good GM here. I think this is an excellent spot. This had nothing to do with Adam. I mean, I want a good give and take between our GM and the coach. This was not one person or another winning a power struggle. This was completely my decision.
And let me ask this. Exactly what has Adam Gase accomplished in the NFL that enables him to play the political Bigfoot role? I don't understand any of this. Is anybody surprised that Odell Beckham Jr. has spent little time with his new team, showing up for only one day of off-season training activities with the Browns before splitting? Cleveland is not a fresh start for OBJ. Rather, Cleveland enables him a new chance to continue acting like an ass. At least new running back Kareem Hunt, who will join the Browns in midseason after serving an 8-game suspension for shoving and kicking a woman at his residence, is showing up every day and saying the right things.
I'm just taking it very seriously. Like, day by day, I'm just, you know, making the best decisions at the time and place and doing everything I can and, like, you know, prevent, you know, something like that from happening again. I'm just making better decisions. It's just, you know, I got to make better decisions all around.
Is there a promise to John Dorsey that nothing like that will ever happen again?
Yes, I definitely did. And John Dorsey knows me very well. And he actually drafted me in Kansas City. And we had a real special connection. And he knows the type of person I am. And that wasn't me. I mean, I definitely made a mistake. And I apologize for it once again. And I told him I'm going to move forward and become a better person.
And before we assume Josh Rosen excels in Miami, know this. The Dolphins appear to be in tanking mode, which means poor Josh might have no better chance of success than he had last year in Arizona, meaning the Dolphins, yeah, could draft first, meaning Tua Tagovailoa could be their pick, placing Rosen on the trading block once again. I've never seen anything like this. Yes, Rosen is to be admired for having worldly perspective in saying of his current nomadic NFL play, quote, "I'm not like some child soldier in Darfur," end quote. And he's going to need that worldly outlook if he's playing for his third team in 3 years. The Cardinals, who botched the handling of the Rosen trade after they chose Kyler Murray as their franchise face, still are not distinguishing themselves as a quality organization. And what do we have here? Elite cornerback Patrick Peterson will miss the first 6 games this season for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policy. General manager Steve Keim still has not spoken to Rosen after not speaking to Rosen for months before the draft. That's called ghosting Rosen, as those Murray rumors swirled. And that is not cool. As you know, and as I know, there are good bosses and there are dreadful bosses. And this must be karma's way of evening out the impossible, the Cubs winning the World Series in 2016, because that family is unraveling. First, Addison Russell accused of domestic abuse by his now ex-wife, followed by Ben Zobrist's publicly aired marital problems. Zobrist has filed for a separation from his wife, Juliana, who, according to a Zobrist court filing in Tennessee, quote, has been guilty of inappropriate marital conduct, which renders further cohabitation impossible. I read that to say that Ben believes that Juliana has been screwing around on him. Juliana Zobrist countered by filing for divorce in Cook County, Illinois. Juliana, of course, symbolized Cubby love when she sang God Bless America before Game 4 of the World Series. And just as Russell has struggled to perform before and after a 40-game suspension imposed by Major League Baseball, he never was charged with a crime, by the way. Zobrist is on leave from the Cubs after a sluggish start this season. Soon to be 38 with his contract about to expire, Zobrist looks finished in the majors. And the Cubs, at least they're back to playing good baseball, but you know what? This kind of reminds me of a house of cards. Joe Maddon in his lame duck season, even though Joe is opening up a restaurant right there at Wrigley Field. All of this could still implode, and I remind you they're in the same division as the Brewers and the Cardinals. And, you know, the Cubs, if they don't make the playoffs, Maddon is going to be fired, and I don't know what Theo will do. Theo is whacked out, too. The Cubs, whew, yeah, you knew when they won, Mariotti aside, you knew when they won in 2016 that it could not last, that something would happen. I just didn't think it would be Addison Russell, Ben Zobrist, divorce papers. This is Cubs stuff, though. Absolutely. Just because they've won one World Series doesn't mean they'll ever win another. These are, after all, the Chicago Cubs. Normally, I side with any pitcher who is yanked without having the chance to make history. But in Chris Sale's case, I applaud Red Sox manager Alex Cora. The Boston A's struck out the side in the seventh inning the other night, giving him 17 on the night, only three away from the major league record of 20 held by Roger Clemens and Kerry Wood. I was there, by the way, that day in Chicago. But Sale, who only lately has lived up to his lucrative new contract extension, is at the stage of his career where his arm health must be prioritized over milestones. So what if the Red Sox went on to lose to Colorado? On a 40-degree night at Fenway, Cora made the right call, preservation. The Red Sox have rebounded from a horrific start to join a delicious race in the American League East, where the Yankees somehow have become a lovable, piecemeal, small-ball bunch despite their $211 million payroll, continuing to win despite a shockingly lengthy injured list, including Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks, and ace Luis Severino. That's not good news for the Tampa Bay Rays, who have shot out to a fast start with a $64 million payroll. I can't wait for the Yankees-Red Sox series in London, where the locals surely will view baseball as bastardized cricket, right? A Mariotti aside, I once went to a cricket match in London, bored stiff one day, at the famous Oval in South London. I arrived late only to see a familiar figure ahead of me at the turnstile by himself, Mick friggin' Jagger. I took my seat without Mick, and suddenly the match stopped. It was the stroke of noon, time for fans to eat their brown bag lunches. That's what they do at cricket games. Stop everything and eat, even the players. If only I had brought a brown bag lunch. So I think I had some soggy fish and chips. The good news today, Mick is back. The Stones are back, and their tour will continue after Jagger's heart surgery, a stent inserted in his heart. I wonder if he can jump and sing and dance and last for 2.5 hours. I do wonder. My show at the Rose Bowl will be one of the last ones It still wouldn't shock me if there is no Stones concert at the Rose Bowl, but at least they are back. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, it looks like your prediction is not going to become a truth. It will take a miracle for Tiger to win the PGA Championship, especially with the way Brooks Koepka is playing. Rather than gushing about Tiger, Chris, might you start paying tribute to Koepka, who is gunning for his fourth major title in the last eight? And he has made obsolete the up-and-down likes of such other young guns as Spieth, McIlroy, Fowler, Dustin Johnson. Chris, say something nice about Brooks.
Well, listen, Brooks Koepka is an amazing golfer. His body, the way he swings, his power, it's all incredible. But there's something incredibly stiff and sterile about Brooks Koepka. It's not a bad thing, but he doesn't have a personality. Even his buddy, his best friend, his BFF, Dustin Johnson, is also kind of like that meathead type. But Dustin, at least, has had a lot of trials and tribulations. He's got Pauly Negrecki on the side. Brooks Koepka is just kind of that meathead jock that hits the ball a ton. And he really doesn't fit into the category of typical golfer. He doesn't have that sort of foreign flair that a lot of guys do that are from across the pond. There's nothing really special about Brooks Koepka other than he's playing amazing golf and nobody is paying attention. And I think maybe this will get him some attention, especially pairing with Tiger in the beginning rounds. But I don't know. I don't even think a win here is going to make him explode into everybody's favorite. Tiger sucks the life, every ounce out of golf when he is playing. And that's just reality. Every news story, every headline, everything has to do with Tiger. And even if Tiger is not playing well, which he didn't on round one, but he still got an eagle. And there wasn't anybody that didn't jump up a little bit when Tiger Woods shot an eagle. Bethpage Black is an incredibly difficult golf course. Guys like Brooks Koepka, like DJ, the guys that can go long, they're the ones that are going to win those courses. I think we said before, Tiger had his best chance at Augusta, which he won. And at the U.S. Open, possibly the British Open, depending on where it's at, he's not going to win PGA Championship events, especially now with them moving it up, where there's not a lot of time between majors. Tiger looked incredibly stiff out there day one. The weather probably wasn't on his side either, but he looked like an older version of Tiger. It wasn't the Tiger we saw at Augusta, but listen, here's what's going to happen. Friday, he's going to move up a little bit. He's going to start to get loose. Saturday, he'll probably have an explosion, and he might be in contention on Sunday, but Brooks has got this thing all the way. Brooks would have to have a complete meltdown and not be able to hit a golf ball on Saturday and Sunday for him not to win this year's PGA Championship.
And Chris, did the sight of John Daly in a cart with his big gulp bring a smile to your face? Or were you lamenting, as I was, the idea that he should be allowed an exemption when he has brought on his health problems with his own bad lifestyle and that he was maybe costing a younger player a spot in the PGA field?
Well, listen, I love John Daly. I think that he's awesome. I think that he's a side of golf that is still needed, just like he was way back when. His health problems, I mean, this is a guy who once said he followed the Jack Daniels and popcorn, dry popcorn, as he always likes to point out, which I don't know the difference between dry popcorn and regular popcorn, other than maybe no butter, I guess. I guess that's the thing. So, of course, his health problems brought this on. But you got to give it to John Daly. He kind of shot back at Tiger after Tiger made a little joke at him. He comes out there with his cart, his big gulp, his New York Yankee pants. He's probably got the John Daly trailer down the street just like he does in Augusta, selling his goods. It is what it is. It brings a human side, a human element to golf. I like it. Again, to me, it's fine because it's always going to be a day one and day two event. John Daly's not going to be in contention moving into anything related to any major ever again, or really probably any golf tournament. I mean, his health just is failing him, unfortunately. But I smile, Jay. I didn't make that big of a deal of it. But again, I love John Daly, and I could get behind a Jack Daniels and dry popcorn diet.
And Chris, please don't tell me that you think the Warriors are better off without Kevin Durant. Are you going there too?
I don't know, Jay. Game two, I mean, it was a close one. The Blazers made it a game. Getting to watch as much of Steph and Seth Curry's mom, I enjoy. Seth stealing the ball from Steph, making that three, that big three, that was enjoyable. But the Warriors aren't going to go down with Durant. The Warriors aren't going down, period. If you can't stop them when they don't have KD, you can't stop them. And I don't know if they're better off without Kevin Durant, but it just proves it's a different team. This is the return to the Splash Brothers, if you want to give it that. It's a team that moves the ball a little bit faster. You see other guys step up, but I don't think they're better off without the best player in the league currently. But as I don't know if the best player in the league needs to come back this year for this playoff run or is going to come back. We may have seen the end of KD in a Warriors jersey, and he still is going to win another title. They're going to win another title. And the way they're playing, unless there's a contender in the West, unless you see KD, Kawhi, Kyrie, unless you see them land in the West, if they land in the East, I don't really see the Warriors. Who's going to stop them next season? It's not going to be the Rockets, not going to be the Blazers. Is it going to be LeBron and Anthony Davis? I don't think so. So I think the Warriors might have a couple more left in the can, Jay. And that's what they're proving to everyone without KD.
Okay, Chris, thanks. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that. Quick. As you know, I'm not a big fan of Draymond Green's mouth. Why did he have to say this about Steph Curry and Klay Thompson? And I'm quoting, "I've never seen us in any situation where there was a big pressure moment and they folded up. But yet they're light-skinned and they're soft." End quote. Excuse me, Dre, but whoever said Curry and Thompson are light-skinned and soft? An apparent reference to their privileged backgrounds as sons of wealthy former NBA players. If that stereotype is in Green's mind as a product of a not-so-privileged background, I think Draymond should keep those thoughts to himself. Race is too sensitive a matter in this country to babble on recklessly. Light-skinned and soft. And the Edwin Jackson story has become a complete mind bog. Never in baseball history has a player so unwanted become so wanted. When Oakland sold the 35-year-old right-hander to Toronto for cash, Jackson set a major league record by joining his 14th different major league team. I dare you to name all 14 without looking it up. And if this is the NBA postseason, it's also time for jokers in the media to emerge. A Milwaukee radio station has banned Drake from its airways during the Eastern Conference Finals, Drake being the most famous ambassador of the rival Raptors. Why do you do that? Is that going to bring listeners to your station? Well, I guess it is Milwaukee, right? And ESPN's Scott Van Pelt, or Van Pout as I call him, who is a dispenser of absolute mush and gush, he's never going to take a stand against a powerful owner or a powerful commissioner. He's never going to risk that. He's just a homeboy for everybody out there. But boy, does Van Pelt love to take on internet trolls. Boy, that's tough, Scott. That's great journalism. Take on those trolls, blasting them the other night for their criticism of Curry. Because Van Pelt has no hair, people assume he's a mature man. Nah, he's like a fanboy, this guy. He's a child, like so many sports media members in 2019. Toughen up, dude.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
What a stinking shame that the biggest headlines from the Stanley Cup playoffs involve officiating. And both times the San Jose Sharks have benefited, first in the Vegas series when the officials erred in ejecting Cody Eakin for a minor cross-check on Joe Pavelski and giving the Sharks a five-minute power play, with San Jose responding with four quick goals in that Game 7 comeback victory. And now we have this, the officials missing an illegal hand pass by Timo Meier that led to San Jose's winning goal in Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals, which gave the Sharks a 2-1 lead against St. Louis. Yes, the four officials huddled after the winning goal by Erik Karlsson. And yes, they realized what the NHL video crew also saw in Toronto, a hand pass that should have been whistled dead immediately. But in those situations in the NHL, just as we saw in the NFC title game when replay wasn't allowed to overrule a non-pass interference call, the officials are helpless. That particular play is not reviewable when the officials didn't call it to begin with. Four officials, eight eyeballs, wasn't called. So the NHL also has an officiating crisis that angers fans and makes the league look shoddy. Why not expanded replay, Gary Bettman? The commish says he can't go anywhere during the postseason without having a TV nearby or his iPad with him. He might be needed for some reason, he says, even if he's out to dinner with his wife. Well, Gary, where were you during Game 3? This bad call may cost the Blues a shot at the Cup Finals, where they haven't been since 1970. And coach Craig Berube handled the injustice about as well as could be expected.
Craig, do you think that was a hand pass, and did you get any explanation?
No explanation.
Did you think it was a hand pass?
Well, what do you guys think?
Yes.
Okay, then don't ask me. There's no reason to ask me.
Well, we want to hear what you have to say.
Nothing. I have nothing to say about it.
On the left side, standing up, Andy.
Chief, your frustration level, though, for a playoff game in overtime to end like that, how difficult is it? And the challenge of getting your team ready to play the next game?
Well, it's difficult to lose in overtime and playoffs anytime. And, you know, got to move on. Like, the team's got to move on. We all got to move on from it and get ready for game four. Really, that's all you can do. I mean, you know, we played a solid hockey game, but we're on the losing side of it. And there's nothing we can do about what happened. We just got to move on.
The NHL apologized to Vegas for that wrong call, but I speak for the masses in saying we're tired of apologies from Bettman and Roger Goodell and gimmicks such as the NBA's final two-minute report, where mistakes of officials are acknowledged for the sake of transparency, much to the disgust of fans after the fact. These leagues are multi-billion dollar operations, after all, so invest some of that money in the best officiating paradigms possible. And yes, use replay in every possible applicable situation. Not only is the integrity of sports at risk here, so is the very popularity of sports, all as legalized sports gambling enters the shady fray. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a Chelsea Drug.